Good morning and welcome. You are tuned in to 2SER 107.3 and it is time for Final Draft. My name's Andrew Popel and every weekend I get to share a half hour of books, writing and literary culture with you, bringing new Australian authors, classic Australian authors to the radio so that you can discover something new, something brilliant to read, to expand across your weekend with. Today is no different. I have a fantastic debut novel from an Australian author. Her name is Tracy Sorensen, and we're going to be talking about The Lucky Galah. Now, I want to take you back to 1960s Australia, where Australian technology was really playing a key role in the race to the moon, with radar installations across the country helping upload and transmit signals from satellites and then the lunar module. Now, into this space, we have Evan Johnson. He's arrived in Port Badminton, a coastal town in remote Western Australia, to take on a role as a tracker helping to get these signals out to the world. Evan and the rest of the residents of Port Badminton, though, are being observed by a very clever galah named Lucky. This book is amazing for so many reasons, but mostly because the voice of Lucky the Galah, is just so vivid and alive. I'm going to be speaking with Tracy today, and she's going to be sharing exactly how she landed on this amazing narrator. So, look, stay tuned. We have got a half hour of amazing writing conversation to share. It's coming up after this short break on Final Draft.
Do you want to know something about Sydney? A query about Queenscliff? A pondering about Paddington? A thought about Thornlie? A reflection on Randwick? A postulation on Parramatta? A musing of Marrickville? 2SER is seeking Sydney. Head over to 2SER.com and ask the questions you want our team to investigate and answer. While you're there, why not vote for your favourite question? 2SER 107.3. Stories, ideas, music.
You are tuned in to 2SER 107.3 and this is Final Draft. Now, throughout the 1960s, Australia played a key role in the race to the moon, as radar sites across the country assisted NASA to track and then broadcast missions into space. In Port Badminton, a remote coastal town in Western Australia, Evan Johnson is about to play a pivotal role in developing these communications, watched over by a most unlikely observer, a young galah named Lucky. The Lucky Galah is the debut novel from Tracy Sorensen, and it sees the titular Lucky sifting through transmissions from the people, books, and yes, even the radar, hoping to understand her fate and role in the grand scheme of things. Now, I'm very lucky to have Tracy Sorensen in the studio. Welcome to Final Draft, Tracy.
Hello, and it's wonderful to be here.
Look, I'm excited to have you. This is your debut novel. It's so exciting. It was really great. I mean, the cover's stunning. I know a lot of people will probably pick it up for that, but I mean, it's so exciting to get between the pages. I want to start with the really obvious thing, and I don't know how many interviews you've done. I think you're probably going to get asked something along these lines quite often, because you know Australia, it's got a grand history of anthropomorphized animals, and they each, you know, they have their distinct personalities that flow through into the narrative, you know, from Blinky Bill to Skippy. What did a galah, and Lucky in particular, offer you in creating this novel?
Okay, well, yes, the galah comes with a lot of baggage. So there's the flaming galah, there's the galah of the souvenir tea towel. It's a very, it's a kitschy Australianery thing. You know, some people just love galahs and just look at them directly without all that baggage. You know, the true bird lover sees a bird. But, you know, culturally, it's an animal with a lot of baggage. And I guess there's a lot of different reasons why I chose a galah, but to me, what it brings is a kind of an outsider voice, that's a very regional voice, very, you know, non-urban, non-slick, you know, kind of voice. It's about place. You know, this is the only continent with galahs in it. So to me, it's immediately signalling this can only be Australia. And then the word lucky, you didn't ask me that, but the word lucky, it's obviously a play on the lucky country. So
we're getting there. There's so much to talk about that. Were you much for ornithology before the lucky galah?
I've been getting twitchier and twitchier as I get older. As a young person, it was just like birds. I kind of was vaguely aware there were birds, you know. Mm. And then as the decades go by, I am just more and more in love with birds. And I don't know, they just speak directly to somewhere deep inside. And I'm spending a lot of time just kind of looking up into the trees, looking for birds. I won't say I'm a really expert twitcher. You know, if you point at something, I might or might not know what it is. But I'm feeling myself tuning in more and more to birds.
There's some beautiful observations, and I love your point of view of lucky. I think this is going to be very hard to capture in the interview. I think people will need to experience Lucky's voice for themselves. But let's get into her history. So as a fledgling, Lucky is caught, and then she's sold to the Kellys before she's even ventured from the nest. Lucky's capture and her domestication, they involve separation, physical humiliation, she has her wings clipped. And also, there's a really striking, really moving scene, a loss of language. And ultimately, she describes this shift as she begins thinking in English, not galah. She begins thinking in English, and it comes alongside her resigning herself to her fate. Mm. It struck me that there could be something of an allegory for Australia's colonial legacy in Lucky's experience.
Absolutely. Mm. Yes. Yeah. I mean, Lucky is a stolen galah, stolen as a baby, unable to grow up with her own people, her own avian people. She's clipped. Her wing is clipped. She has a great, you know, from having the whole sky and the whole landscape, which would have been her birthright. It's just narrowed right down to a cage. And definitely, you're quite right. There's a parallel there, a reasonably subtle parallel. So, you know, I wasn't kind of shouting it from the rooftops. But, yeah, absolutely, there's a prison. A prison. She ends up behind bars. And the word lucky is a kind of a poignant thing in that sense. It's a bit like the lucky country itself. It's like that phrase has just been adopted in a very superficial way, but it's actually kind of laced with other meanings. And it's the same with this. You know, there's a superficial sense in which she's lucky, and then there's a kind of a poignant sense in which, this is all about loss.
Yeah. Before we get to the reverberations around the word lucky, as in the title, but also in Lucky's name, I wanted to think a little bit more about her character. She reflects and perhaps even dwells on this idea of fate. And very early on, she's talking about how her stocks rose as Evan Johnson. We haven't talked much about him either, as his fell. And really, the unfolding of the lucky galah is the unfolding of that story and Lucky's perception of it. Mm. But it being absorbed by this ebb and flow of fate, it struck me that when she's with the Kellys, we have this sense that what they see as caring for her is really this form of abuse. The sky is denied to her, even though it's right there for her to see. And really, you know, they clip her wings. And then spoilers. When we meet her, she's being cared for by Lizzie. Mm. And Lizzie's form of caring, the thing that really resonates with Lucky, is simply a respect for her individuality.
Yes, that's right. That's right. For the Kellys, she's the cocky. She's not even named. Mm. Lizzie, Lucky is an individual and, her companion. And Lizzie is still a human being. There's still that huge barrier, and they don't entirely understand each other. Lucky, in a sense, knows a lot more about Lizzie than Lizzie knows about Lucky, just because Lucky has managed to tune into the radio telescope dish up on the hill, so she's kind of getting extra information about everybody. That's true. For the Kellys, she's just the galah. She's a category rather than an individual. And, you know, I guess that's the same, you know, among humans too, that we can just categorise people and that's enough information. And there's a completely different process about knowing people individually and, you know, having a sense of them as equals, genuine equals.
Did you want to say something, though, about the world we're living in now and perhaps the way the country is going? Just, it really struck me, this idea that all Lizzie did was recognise Lucky for who she was. There's another scene where, it's completely escaped me, the character's name. But Lucky is amazed that she has been seen.
Yes. Oh, that's right. The other person, I mean, Lizzie really gets Lucky as an individual. The person who really understands that Lucky is fundamentally a bird is Harry Baumgarten, the entomologist. So Harry, when Harry comes up to Lucky's cage and looks at Lucky, he's not seeing a cocky. He's not seeing a flaming galah. He's not seeing this category. He's actually seeing a bird, and he's almost kind of X-ray looking in through her feathers to her beautiful light avian bones. He's kind of understanding her as a bird. And for me, that's very poignant because Lucky just laps that up. She's just glowing, you know, basking in this sense of finally truly being seen as a bird. And it is poignant because she's been taken from her bird life, and she's kind of just trying to be a not very successful human.
I'm speaking with Tracy Sorensen about the Lucky Galah. If you are intrigued about this idea of the voice of the galah carrying the narrative, you should be. I challenge you to read this. Right now, though, we are going to take a track. This is from Amaya Lauchericha. I hope I have pronounced that correctly. She's a Melbourne-based artist, and this is Under the Tide. are tuned in to 2SER 107.3. You're listening to Final Draft. Right there, we had a track from Amaya Lacharica that was called Under the Tide. And on the show today, we are discussing a debut novel from Tracy Sorensen. It's called The Lucky Galah, a fantastic, fantastic look back into 1960s Australia, all told from the perspective of a very clever galah named Lucky. Tracy, you picked up on something that I had thought a lot about as I read. I didn't have a specific question until you mentioned it, though. The way Lucky tunes into the radar signals, Lucky also reads and takes very much from books and the like. Now, as a conceit, you're obviously working in allegory here, but as a conceit, that's a really interesting one. What tensions did you have to resolve for yourself there, this idea that Lucky could kind of tune in? Is she just taking that omniscient narrator power that kind of exists, or did you have something else that I don't know about galahs?
Yeah, that's right. We don't know everything about galahs. Maybe they can tune in like this. No, just being silly. I think.
You have a beautiful scene at the very early stage, before the radar is erected, the early sort of tuning point that Evan creates, and the galahs help him tune it by sort of jumping back and forth on the wires. And
that's right.
I like the way you kind of had a mechanism for how the galahs tuned in.
Well, that's right, yeah. I mean, for me, you know, when you finally get to these moments, it's like, oh, yeah, that's obvious. But, you know, getting there, it takes a few leaps. And but a few things just beautifully came together for me. I'd heard this anecdote, because I'm actually from that part of the world. I've given the town a fictional name, but, you know, some of it's based on reality. And I'd heard this story about how the galahs just kept tearing up the cables that the NASA technicians were carefully laying, you know, for this kind of incredibly expensive equipment that was being shipped in from the United States. And so the galahs kept unpicking it and wrecking it, and they were bouncing up and down on the cables, and the dish was going up at the same time. So to me, when I was having trouble with... I was having trouble with this incredibly restricted point of view, which obviously you get from a galah in a cage or a very limited point of view. And so the books were kind of bringing me out into a bigger world. I had this thing where Lucky's reading all the books at the local book exchange. She reads them by tearing them up for exercise. But even that wasn't quite enough. I needed some way in to the bigger stories of the town. And so I was thinking about this dish, looking down on the town. It's kind of bored now because it's been decommissioned, so rather than kind of do all this NASA stuff with spacecraft, it just kind of turns its attention to the town, and so it's kind of looking down over the town, tuning in. And so that kind of there was a moment where the two things came together, this old story I'd heard about the galahs bouncing up and down on the cable and my need to have a more omniscient voice. Yeah, I don't know. It just turned up. It was lovely.
Now, we are discussing The Lucky Galah from Tracy Sorensen. And look, so far, we've focused a lot on Lucky. And it still amazes me how well you've carried the story through the voice of a galah. But there are many a human in this book. And I took a little bit of a backwards idea here. You create these incredibly strong, resilient female characters, but for me that also highlighted the representations of masculinity, and they jumped out at me. Look, Evan Johnson, he's oblivion kind of to the outside world. He's very focused on his job. Kevin Kelly and this sort of desire to be comfortable that he comes to ruminate on, they all seem indicative of, I guess, a mindset that's so sure of its place in the world, what I guess we'd be calling, but they wouldn't have back then, maybe, this idea of male privilege, you know. But they're too comfortable or complacent to really extend themselves, push themselves beyond their boundaries. And we're going to... I want to also get to this idea of the lucky country. They felt like they were kind of representative of Australia at the time. What does Australia want? What is this complacent mindset that doesn't know how to be comfortable, just knows it wants it?
Yeah. I mean, I could really go on and on about this, but there's lots of different strands there that really interest me. I mean, Kevin Kelly and Evan Johnson represent you know, and the previous up to the present, you know, model of Australian white bloke masculinity, you know, one a working class bloke, another one more of a technocrat, but ultimately, you know, sitting there comfortably, as you say, in charge of things, you know, it's their world. The world is very logical to them, you know, and they know where they are in it. But, you know, that's been incredibly troubled by feminism, you know, and the and the environment and lots of other kind of issues come that are in the world today. So my kind of theme in the novel, and again, I really want to assure potential readers that it's not a tract, but you know, there's a background theme there which I call rising bird, falling man. So there's the kind of the decline of the male force and the rise of a female and animal and environmental kind of force. And yeah, the men are in they're kind of not they're having trouble. And the other thing that I like about it, which I'm not sure I'm kind of trying to get the hang of how many spoilers to introduce, but we do know very early in the novel that Evan Johnson dies. We don't know exactly how or why he dies, so I guess I'll give this spoiler myself. But I like the fact that the bloke in the adulterous, well, the bloke dies and the woman doesn't. You know, in something like Madame Bovary and Anna Karenina and all the classic, you know, novels of that type with the adulterous wife, she has to die.
Yeah.
And in this novel, yeah, she doesn't.
She doesn't. Is it drawing too long a bow then, particularly given the Luna backstory here? Evan and, look, particularly Evan, has this idea that he is the centre of his domestic universe and everything orbits around him, and he very much has to come to learn that he is just a body orbiting in this relation to other things.
Wow, I hadn't thought of that, but that's beautiful. No, I'll go with it. That's really true. Yeah, yeah. That's right. That's true.
So another frequent motif of the lucky galah, we've been alluding to it all conversation, is Donald Horne's Lucky Country. So Lucky the Galah is constantly reflecting on how the residents of Port Badminton fulfil roles as Horne's Australians that he talks about in the Lucky Country. It struck me that there's this tension between Lucky's outsider status and her feelings that she couldn't now survive outside of her captive home and the cups of tea that she's come to rely on. How did you feel about writing this Australia? Or do you see a big difference between this Australia, the Australia predominantly of the 60s and late 60s, and the Australia we live in now?
Yeah, it's this novel in some ways is a conversation with the Lucky Country. So it's kind of just over 50 years later. We have this small book that Horne wrote in 1964 and that people refer to constantly.
Often incorrectly.
And often incorrectly.
Unironically.
Unironically, yeah. Because famously he says in The Lucky Country, Australia is a second-rate country run by second-rate people or something. No, that's right, not a second-rate country. It's it relies on its luck, rather than any kind of intention. Yeah, but this book is a conversation, and it's really interesting reading Horne now, how much of it is unbelievably prophetic and also how much has changed, you know. So in 1964, it's before feminism, before official policies of multiculturalism, even though, of course, it was a multicultural society. A lot has changed, but a lot remains the same. And this, I think the second rate leaders thing holds. maybe the last couple of weeks more than ever.
All right. So lastly, I want to ask you about what draws us together as a community. So, you know, nothing big. Look, The Lucky Galah is very much an exploration of the forces that bring people together, as well as those that separate us. It feels vital to our national discussion at the moment. We're already covering this, let's face it. Did you come to any conclusions? Or would you like anyone to take conclusions from the Lucky Galah?
Yeah, that's a really beautiful question because, to me, that's so true, that with all the pain and difference and, you know, extreme differences, all that kind of stuff, what is it? What is the unifying theme? And I guess for me, this land is, you know, this you know, we're living in the same place where we're breathing in the same eucalypt, you know, smell. Where, you know, between the Indian Ocean and the Pacific Ocean, we've got that red dirt centre. And we are shaped by this land. We're still shaped by it. So yes, we've imported a whole lot of culture from other parts of the world, but then the land is speaking back to us the whole time. And it's kind of almost gone out of fashion to, you know, be talking about how the landscape is so important to the Australian psyche. I mean, that was kind of, you know, in the original nation building kind of, you know, stuff, that was all, they were important themes that have kind of gone out of fashion. But now with this, you know, the environmental crisis that we're living in, it's like we have to know where we are, where we live, you know, who's here. And, so for me, the Galah does bring everyone together. Mm. Everyone knows what a Galah looks like in Australia. You know, we all know a Galah. We've all got a story about a Galah. You know, I find people, I go through life and people immediately start telling me about Galahs they've known, or, you know, whether in culture or in real life, and last time they saw them. And, you know, it's kind of a friendly, quiet, friendly presence. Very ubiquitous presence, you know, in Australia. She does represent a unifying force.
You mentioned cultures that have been imported. Some might argue have been imposed in our country. I think perhaps one other thing that the Lucky Galah implicitly engages with that brings us together is our ability to tell stories. And that's actually something that can encompass the tensions that necessarily arise when stories compete. And beautifully gives us a mechanism to begin to resolve them. So, look, Tracy, thank you so much for coming into the studio. I'm speaking with Tracy Sorensen. Her debut novel is The Lucky Galah. Yes, you understand me correctly. It is narrated by a Galah. It is absolutely fantastic, and it is an important narrative and conversation about Australia. Thanks so much, Tracy.
Thank you.
Get your live music fix at Record Fair Live on the first Saturday of every month. Support the local Sydney scene while enjoying a Saturday sesh at Waywards with two bands performing each gig. On March 3rd, catch Lost Tones and their Great Garage Vibe, as well as punk outfit Nick Mutants and the Delinquents. Doors open at 4 p.m. and entry is free. For more info on bands and lineups, head to bankhotel.com.au/recordfairlive. 2SER is a proud partner of Record Fair Live.
Located in pristine Hunter Valley bushland, the Gumball Music and Arts Festival is widely regarded as Australia's best boutique camping festival. Held over 3 days at Dashville from Friday, April 27, the Gumball is a music lover's paradise. There's over 30 live acts, on-site camping, markets and loads of all-age activities. Perfect for a more chilled festival experience. Check out thegumball.com.au for full lineup and tickets. Tickets on sale now. Dashville sponsors 2SER 107.3.
You are on 2SER 107.3 and you're listening to Final Draft for a few minutes longer. My name is Andrew Popel. It has been a pleasure hosting you today. Thank you so much for tuning in. Thank you also to Tracy Sorensen for coming in and discussing her book, The Lucky Galah. Get out and read it. I really love that book. Now, exciting news. The Stella Prize shortlist is going to drop this week on Thursday. So we'll be sure to talk about that some more. This is one of my favorite prizes. I always love the books that are coming out. But for now, you have the long list to pore over. But don't go anywhere. The Vulture's Nest is coming up in just a few minutes. Well, not even a few minutes. Vulture's Nest is coming up shortly. My name is Andrew Popel. I will be back next week with more books, writing and literary culture on Final Draft. But for now, I've got to say goodbye.